All over the world, there are ancient sites that don't fit the story we've been taught. Buried ruins that are too old, too advanced, or just too inconvenient. And every time someone tries to dig deeper, the permits vanish. The data gets buried, the silence gets louder. By the end of this video, you'll see why entire chapters of human history may have been erased on purpose, and how the truth is still hiding underground. In Turkey, the ground was scraped back and a 12,000-year-old megalithic temple rose from the dirt. In Indonesia, a scientist scanned a hill and found layers of stone stacked deeper than the pyramids. In the Amazon, LIDAR scans lit up the jungle canopy, revealing forgotten cities in places we were told no civilization ever lived. And every time, the same thing happens. Mainstream experts call it a fluke. Funding dries up, and the public never hears the full story. Why? Because if these sites are real, they don't just rewrite history books. They blow up the timeline completely. In this episode, we're unsealing the evidence, from Göbekli Tepe to Gunung Padang, to entire cities beneath the Amazon. We'll show the scans, the documents, the whistleblowers, and the strange pattern of silence that follows every dig. Because maybe the real question isn't what we lost. It's who made sure we'd forget. Here's a pattern nobody talks about. A buried temple under a mountain in Indonesia. A prehistoric site in Turkey that got uncovered, then quietly reburied. A sealed chamber under the Sphinx that scanners aren't allowed to touch anymore. And archaeologists who suddenly get reassigned the moment they ask the wrong question. It sounds like a Netflix thriller you'd binge in one night. Except it's real. No fiction, no clickbait, just receipts. Because every time one of these sites rises from the dirt, it's like watching history glitch in real time. In Turkey, they found a site called Göbekli Tepe. It had giant stone pillars, advanced carvings, astronomical alignments, and it was built over 11,000 years ago. That's older than the pyramids, older than Stonehenge, and way older than what your sixth grade teacher said was possible. And here's the weirdest part. It was buried on purpose. Like someone tried to hide it gently, carefully, as if they didn't want it destroyed. Just forgotten. And guess what happened after they uncovered it? The guy who led the dig mysteriously died. The site got locked down, and some sections were literally reburied, like with bulldozers, by the government. Because apparently, the best way to study the past is to shove it back under a few tons of dirt and pretend it never happened. Meanwhile, in Indonesia, ground-penetrating radar found an ancient staircase going down into a hidden complex that could date back 20,000 years. The team was halfway through digging when the government said, that's enough truth for one century. They shut it down. And in Egypt, don't even try to scan under the Sphinx. There's something under there. They know it. We know it. But the second anyone brings a radar machine within 100 feet, security shows up like you're trying to steal the Declaration of Independence. Even UNESCO, the group that's supposed to protect ancient sites for all humanity, somehow forgets how to protect anything the second it contradicts the official story. Sites get blocked, research gets defunded, and suddenly it's like your PhD just expired in the middle of a sentence. And look, we're not saying everyone's in on it. We're not saying there's some Illuminati lizard cult with a grudge against stone temples. But let's just ask the obvious. If history is so settled, if our timeline is so bulletproof, why are they burying things again? Because this isn't about rocks. It's not about statues. It's not even about ancient aliens, though we'll get there. This is about memory. It's about the idea that maybe we're a civilization with amnesia. And every time we start to remember, somebody shows up with a shovel. right, so before we dive headfirst into the rabbit hole, let's talk about the story we were all raised on. Not the bedtime kind, the official one. The one written in textbooks, stamped on museum plaques, and whispered by every educational documentary that put half your class to sleep. Picture your ninth grade history teacher, chalk in hand, coffee breath, confidence of a man who's never questioned a single footnote. He points at a timeline on the board and says, humans were hunters, then farmers, then geniuses. Simple, clean, safe. For millions of years, we were cave dwellers and rock collectors. Then, suddenly, civilization. Mesopotamia shows up around 3000 BC with writing, farming, and math. Egypt follows, Greece, Rome, then us, scrolling TikTok and pretending we invented everything. Neat, tidy, and wildly convenient. Because this version keeps history short, recent, and easy to control. It says, don't worry, there's no great mystery. Humans just got smart eventually. But what if that wasn't discovery? What if it was recovery? Because archaeology isn't a free-for-all for truth. It's a gated community, guarded by tenure, politics, and fear of being wrong. Step out of line and your funding vanishes faster than your reputation. Ask anyone who's tried. The pattern's always the same. You dig too deep, literally or metaphorically, and the walls close in. Your permits disappear. Your colleagues ghost you. And your name ends up next to the word pseudo. Maybe it's not about science anymore. Maybe it's about story management. Because questioning the timeline doesn't just break a theory, it breaks the system built around it. And that's why these next discoveries really matter. They're not just old, they're forbidden. Sites that shouldn't exist, evidence that won't die, and a trail of silenced researchers who got too close. So before we dig, remember this. The oldest lie in history might be history itself. Let's talk about the site that broke the timeline, quite literally. The one that made even the gatekeepers sweat, Göbekli Tepe. In 1994, a German archaeologist named Klaus Schmidt started digging at a dusty hill in southeastern Turkey, locals called the Potbelly Hill. Just a bump in the landscape, with goats, grass, nothing special. Until the shovels hit stone, massive pillars, carved animals, human figures, circular temples, each block taller than a man, weighing tons, cut and placed with mathematical precision. The radiocarbon dates came back as 9600 BC. That's 11,600 years ago, 7,000 before the pyramids. According to textbooks, we were still hunter-gatherers with zero engineering skills. Yet somehow, these cavemen aligned multi-ton pillars to the stars. It wasn't buried by time or weather. It was buried by people, layer by layer, on purpose, as if someone wanted it hidden, not destroyed. A civilization burying its own memory. You'd think that would flip every history book on Earth, rewrite curriculums, spark a new scientific renaissance. Instead, they stopped digging. After 30 years, only about 5% of the site is excavated. The rest? Left for future generations. Translation, let's not find anything we can't explain. They even built a tourist roof over part of it, drilling modern support columns through ancient ground layers to protect it from sunburn while quietly damaging it. Klaus Schmidt, the man who found it, died suddenly in 2014. Since then, the narrative has been watered down. Ritual site, symbolic temple, not that advanced. Because admitting our ancestors were smarter than us is apparently a career risk. But Göbekli Tepe wasn't a fluke. Across the same region are Karahan Tepe, Bon Kuklutarla, Sefer Tepe, all cut from the same stone, the same design, language, same time period. This wasn't a one-off temple. It was a network, a civilization that shouldn't exist, but it does. So why bury it? Why hide a temple built before farming? What were they protecting us from or protecting from us? because half a world away, another hill was waiting to tell the same story. But this time, it wasn't just forgotten, it was shut down. Half a world away from Turkey sits another hill, quiet, green, ordinary, West Java, Indonesia. Locals call it Gunung Padang, the Mountain of Enlightenment, which is ironic because the second people started digging, the lights went out real fast. Early 2010s, a geologist named Dr. Danny Hillman Natagwaja shows up with an idea that sounds like career suicide. What if this hill isn't natural? What if it's man-made, older than anything we know? Now cue the laughter, the eye rolls, the take your meds, Danny. But he wasn't guessing. He brought receipts. Ground-penetrating radar, seismic tomography, core samples, tools that peek inside the earth without turning it into a crater. And the results? Layers, deep ones. The top layer, 2,000 years old. Next, 7,000 to 8,000. Below that, 10 plus thousand years old, and at the bottom, possibly 20,000 years. That's Ice Age territory, before agriculture, before writing, before civilization. If the bottom layer is artificial, it means humans were building monumental structures while mammoths still roamed the tundra. That alone would nuke every timeline in the textbooks. The minute those findings went public, the hammer dropped. Research permits revoked, excavation halted mid-dig, funding frozen, report under review, and the official reason? Insufficient evidence. Translation? The evidence was too loud. Dr. Hillman gave interviews, begged for independent verification, offered full access to the data, but instead he got blacklisted. Colleagues stopped answering calls, papers were rejected. He never retracted a single finding. He just stopped getting invited to the party. Does that sound familiar? Because that's the playbook. Someone finds something that shouldn't exist. The system laughs. Then it censors you. And then it just forgets. But the scans didn't vanish. The layers are still there. The core samples still exist. They just live in the shadows now. Because if Gunung Padang is real, if humans were building before the last ice age ended, then the story of who we are isn't late, it's rebooted. And if that kind of truth can be buried under a hill in Indonesia, imagine what's still locked beneath the sand of Egypt, where the gatekeepers wear suits instead of helmets. There's something different about Egypt. It's not just the temples or the pyramids or the statues that still stand after thousands of years. It's the feeling that whatever this place was, we're not supposed to understand it. And if you try to, you'll run into a wall, not made of stone, made of people. For the past few decades, access to Egypt's ancient sites, especially the ones that matter most, has been controlled by a very small circle, and at the center of that circle is a man named Zahi Hawass. He's been the face of Egyptian antiquities for years, and for just as long, he's been the gatekeeper of the narrative. He decides who gets to dig, who gets access, and what gets said publicly about what's found. Now, to be fair, Hawass has done a lot to promote Egypt's history, but he's also been one of the most aggressive and egregious defenders of the mainstream timeline, no matter what the evidence shows. And that brings us to the Sphinx. In the early 1990s, a geologist named Dr. Robert Scoach looked at the weathering patterns on the Sphinx and made a simple, devastating observation that this isn't wind erosion that we see, it's water erosion. And if that's true, it means the Sphinx stood during a time when Egypt had heavy rainfall, something that hasn't happened since well before 5000 BC, because it's a desert now. So in other words, the Sphinx might be twice as old as we've been told, built by a civilization we don't know, using knowledge we don't understand. Scotch presented its findings. The data held up. But then the doors shut closed. Hawass publicly dismissed the theory, called Scotch unqualified, laughed off the entire idea as fringe fantasy. But the evidence? Oh, it didn't go away. It still hasn't. Then came the radar scans under the Sphinx, led by a team working with the Edgar Cayce Foundation. Now, laugh if you want, but the tech was legit, and what they found? Anomalies, empty chambers, spaces that shouldn't be there, right between the paws. In almost the exact spot that ancient texts described the buried Hall of Records. Now, did they open it? No, of course not. They just quietly said the data was inconclusive and moved on. Then there's Tomb 55, found in the Valley of the Kings. A mismatched burial, a sarcophagus that didn't fit, bones that didn't belong, an enigma wrapped in stone and barely spoken about since. And deeper still, there's the Osiris Shaft, a vertical chamber beneath the Giza Plateau that drops down over 100 feet, three levels, with flooded base, massive stone boxes, no inscriptions, no explanation. Most people don't even know it exists. And the few who've been allowed in? Well, they're not talking. Because in Egypt, access to these kinds of discoveries isn't about truth. It's about control. The narrative is protected like a national security asset. Anything that contradicts it gets minimized, or buried, or locked behind iron gates. And here's the most damning part. It's not that Egypt has nothing left to reveal. Quite the opposite. It's that they've already found things and made a choice not to follow them. Which begs the question, what's so dangerous about the truth? Because when you look closer, they didn't just ignore a few cracks in the timeline. They've sealed entire chambers, dismissed their own artifacts, and locked away evidence that rewrites everything. Because when you look closer, they didn't just ignore a few cracks in the story. They've buried entire chapters, then hired PR teams to convince the world those pages never existed. Let's start with the most blatant cover-up in Egyptian history, the chamber beneath the Sphinx. Back in the 1990s, a team of researchers, Thomas Tobecki and John Anthony West, with geological analysis from Dr. Robert Scotch, used seismic equipment to scan beneath the Sphinx. And what did they find? A rectangular cavity, perfectly shaped, right between the paws. It was not natural, not speculation. It was a legit empty space. They published their findings, even got mainstream press coverage. Egyptian authorities didn't deny the data. In fact, they acknowledged the cavity existed. So, did they open it? No, of course not. They locked it down. And then later, Zahi Hawass flat out denied its existence. Despite the data, despite the seismic maps, despite photographic evidence. Look, that's not archaeology. That's gaslighting on a global scale. And then there's the Inventory Stela, an actual Egyptian artifact found near the Sphinx. It says, in no uncertain terms, that the Sphinx was already ancient during the reign of Khufu, which means Khufu didn't build it. But instead of celebrating this as an incredible discovery, a missing link to a pre-dynastic past, they called it a later forgery. No evidence, no counter-argument, just doesn't fit, must be fake. Hawass himself dismissed it, because if the Sphinx is older than Khufu, then the whole narrative of old Kingdom Egypt collapses like a tourist on a camel in July. But let's keep digging, literally. Because in Saqqara, there's an underground network called the Serapeum, where you'll find dozens of massive black granite boxes, each weighing up to 70 tons, carved with such precision that modern engineers have said it would be difficult, even today, to replicate their polish and tolerances. Now, what were they for? The official story, bull coffins. Seriously, except no bulls have been found inside. There are no inscriptions, no markings, no sarcophagi-style decorations. Just giant boxes in tight tunnels, too big to move in or out without having built the structure and the roof around them. So either sacred cows had luxury real estate, or these boxes served a much stranger purpose, and no one wants to talk about it. And speaking of strange, beneath the entire Giza Plateau is a vast network of tunnels, shafts, and flooded chambers. Some are mapped, some are known only to a few insiders, and most are labeled sealed for safety, which is code for off-limits unless you're part of the club. And here's what matters. Some of these shafts connect directly to underground aquifers, meaning the pyramids were built on top of water. Not an accident, a design. Engineer Christopher Dunn proposed a radical theory that the Great Pyramid wasn't a tomb at all. It was a machine, a power plant, that used vibration, water, and resonance to generate energy. Now, is that proven? No. But what is proven is that the infrastructure is there. Flooded chambers, shafts connected to water, internal resonance cavities in the king's chamber. And instead of investigating further, they sealed the areas, shut down independent research, and pretended it was just another coincidence. But hang on, let's get real weird. At Abydos, inside the Temple of Seti, are carvings that appear to show a helicopter, a submarine, a tank, and what looks like a jet. Mainstream scholars say it's a palimpsest, two sets of hieroglyphs that got accidentally carved over each other. Fine, that happens. But how does a double carving create a helicopter with rotor blades and landing skids? Why not a duck? Why not a leaf? Well, instead of investigating the implications, they mock it. Case closed, because laughter is the fastest way to kill a question. And then there is the Dendera Light, a carving inside the Temple of Hathor that looks shockingly like a light bulb. Serpent-shaped filament inside a glass dome, cord leading to a power box, and figures standing around it like engineers doing maintenance. Mainstream claim? It's symbolic. Symbolic of what exactly? Ancient snakes and tubes? Even if it was just metaphor, why does it look exactly like something we invented 4,000 years later? And last but absolutely not least, let's go underground again. The Osiris Shaft, discovered in the 1990s beneath the Giza Plateau, it plunges over 100 feet down across three levels. The bottom chamber is flooded, and it contains giant basalt boxes, unmarked, unexplained, and mostly off-limits. You can't just walk in. Most of it's not even accessible to the average researcher. And why? Well, no explanation. Just locked gates and quiet avoidance. They know it's there. They've mapped it. And they've made a deliberate choice not to go further. In the worst part, they don't have to explain it, because they control the story. The rest of us? We're expected to take a selfie at the pyramid, buy a plastic scarab in the gift shop, and move along. But that's not going to happen, because we're not just talking about ruins anymore. We're talking about a global firewall between the public and the truth. And it's not that they won't open the door. It's that they never planned to. So let's leave Egypt for a minute, because Egypt deserves a video just for itself, and we're going to create that eventually. Let's fly halfway across the world to Bolivia. High up in the Andes, where the air is thin and the llamas don't care about you, and the ruins break every rule in the archaeological handbook. We're talking about two sites here, Tiwanaku, the ancient city, and Pumapunku, its megalithic next-door neighbor. Now, if you're listening to this episode while multitasking, pause for a second and go look up a photo of Pumapunku. Seriously, do it. We'll wait for a second. What you're looking at are giant stone blocks, some weighing 100 tons or more, cut with angles so precise they make modern construction equipment blush. Perfect 90-degree corners, interlocking notches, drill hole symmetry. Some of the blocks look like they came straight out of a 3D printer, but they didn't. because this was supposedly built by a pre-Incan civilization over 1500 years ago using stone tools and zero mortar. And that's the safe estimate, because when you dig deeper, geologists and fringe researchers say parts of the site may go back as far as 15,000 years, which would mean this stuff was built before agriculture even existed. So let's stop and think about that for a second. How do you shape and move 100-ton stones at high altitude with no riding system, no wheels, no steel, no pulleys, and no pack animals? The answer? You don't. Come on. Not without something we're not being told. Mainstream archaeologists say the builders use stone hammers and lots of time. Okay, sure. But here's the problem. Try taking a stone hammer and carving a perfect groove into andesite, which is harder than steel. Trying doing that for one block. Okay, now go do it for hundreds. And while you're at it, make sure the cuts match each other to within a fraction of a millimeter. Because somehow these blocks fit together like Lego. Not kind of close, exactly. You could slide a credit card through some of the joints. Even the late archaeologist Arthur Posnansky, who spent decades studying the site in the early 20th century, concluded that Pumapunku was likely built around 15,000 BC based on astronomical alignments. Now, how did mainstream archaeology respond to that? Take a guess. That's right. They ignored it, then rewrote the history books, then called anyone who brought it up a pseudo-archaeologist. So what's their explanation? Well, the Inca did it. Cool. Except the Inca themselves said they didn't build it. They told the Spanish that the site was already ancient when they got there. Now, here's where it gets even stranger. Some of the stone blocks at Pumapunku were blasted apart, shattered and tossed around like a bomb went off. They weren't just eroded. They were ripped, scattered like a Lego set thrown by a cosmic toddler. So, what caused that? An earthquake? A cataclysm? An explosion? Nobody really knows. And no one seems all that interested in finding out. Because Pumapunku doesn't just challenge the timeline. It challenges the toolbox, the technology, the entire origin story of what ancient humans were actually capable of. And Tiwanaku, just meters away, doesn't help either. It's full of stone monoliths, perfectly aligned gates, and the infamous Sun Gate, a single massive slab with carvings that some believe record astronomical and calendrical cycles. Now, how did they know this stuff? How did they shape these stones at 12,000 feet above sea level? And why does it feel like we're just shrugging our way past one of the most advanced ancient construction sites in the world? Well, it's because we are. They call this primitive. But you don't build like this on accident. You build like this with intent, with math, with knowledge that we still don't have. Or maybe with something we've forgotten. And just like that, what we thought were ruins? Well, start looking a lot more like receipts. All right, so grab your Geiger counter, because we're heading to Pakistan, where a 4,000-year-old city looks like it got hit by a bomb before bombs even existed. Welcome to Mohenjo-Daro, ancient city, brick buildings, advanced sewer system. Oh, and possibly the site of the first nuclear-level blast in human history. Let's start with what makes this city weird, besides the fact that no one talks about it. Mohenjo-Daro was part of the Indus Valley Civilization, one of the oldest in the world, right up there with Sumer and Egypt. But while Sumer gave us cuneiform and Egypt gave us the pyramids, Mohenjo-Daro gave us a crater. When archaeologists started digging up the site in the 1920s, they expected pottery, bones, and temples. You know, normal ancient city stuff. But what they found instead were skeletons, lying in the streets, hands covering their heads, like they dropped dead in an instant. No signs of battle, no weapons nearby, no mass graves or ceremonial burials, just people frozen in time, as if something hit the city so fast, so violently, that no one had time to react. Now, here's where it gets wild. Some of those skeletons, according to early reports, were radioactive, as in hot, levels far above background radiation. And some of the clay and stone found in the area was vitrified, a fancy word for melted into glass by extreme heat. So let me put this in perspective. Vitrification happens in nuclear detonations. It also happens during meteor strikes or volcanic eruptions. But there are no volcanoes near Mohenjo-Daro, no impact crater, and no evidence of a natural disaster. Just buildings partially melted, stones that fused together under temperatures far beyond what ancient fire pits could produce. So, you're still with me? Because mainstream archaeologists hate this story. They say the radiation readings were flawed. They say the vitrification might be from lightning or kiln accidents. They say the bodies were just abandoned, not instantly killed. But none of those explanations stick. Kilns don't melt stone walls. Lightning doesn't glass the ground across city blocks. And people don't just lay face down in perfect preservation unless something catastrophic happened without warning. Even ancient texts hint at something more. In the Mahabharata, an ancient Hindu epic written thousands of years ago, there are descriptions of a single projectile charged with the power of the universe, a column of smoke and flame as bright as 10,000 suns. The corpses burned so badly they were unrecognizable. Does that sound familiar? Because it should. That's a nuke. In a text written thousands of years ago, before Hiroshima. Now, are we saying Mohenjo-Daro was bombed by ancient astronauts with uranium slingshots? No, we're not. But we are saying there's evidence of a heat-based cataclysm that science won't touch. Archaeology won't follow it. And history refuses to admit it even exists. Because if Mohenjo-Daro was wiped out by technology, ours or someone else's, long before we were supposed to have it, then our entire understanding of human development is not just wrong, it's off by thousands of years. So at this point, if you're thinking, okay, but maybe this is just a few isolated cases. Maybe it's just Egypt, or maybe it's just Turkey. Well, let's kill that idea real quick. Because once you zoom out, you start to see it everywhere. Different nations, different ruins, same damn playbook. Let's rewind back to Pumapunku for a second. We already talked about the precision stonework, the mystery of how it was built, and how it looks like someone hit the site with a celestial wrecking ball. But just a few minutes away is Tiwanaku, one of the oldest cities in the Americas, and it's still only partially excavated. So ask yourself, why? Because the moment things start getting weird, like, oh, I don't know, solar alignments that predate known civilizations, or blocks that seem mathematically placed to mark celestial events, the dig slows down to a crawl. They say it's complicated. Well, the translation? We found something, and now we're pretending we didn't. Then there's Sacsayhuaman in Peru. Go look up the stone walls. They're shaped like puzzle pieces, giant ones. Each stone is cut to fit perfectly with the others. No mortar, no wiggle room, no way we could replicate it today. Mainstream archaeologists say the Inca did it. Cool, except the very own Inca themselves said these walls were already there when they showed up. So what does academia do? Well, they teach the Inca built it anyway, because facts are flexible when the story's already written. Now let's fly east into the water. Yonaguni, off the coast of Japan. Underwater rock formations that look like staircases, temples, and hallways. Some scientists say it's natural. Others say it's man-made and could date back over 10,000 years, which means it was built when the land was still above sea level, which would put it right around the end of the last ice age. So have we sent full excavation teams? Nope. It's mostly ignored because nobody wants to rewrite Asian prehistory either. Now, what about Sardinia, Italy's forgotten anomaly? The island is covered with nuraghi, megalithic towers, thousands of years old, built with interlocking stones that resemble Peruvian and Egyptian techniques. Some say they're linked to the giants of Sardinian myth. Others say they were built by a lost Mediterranean civilization that got wiped off the map. But when researchers try to dig deeper, the permits get revoked, reports vanish, access dries up. Same island, same story. Then there's North America. And while we're doing the giant skeleton section here, let's not pretend there's nothing going on. There are mounds all over the Midwest, some thousands of years old, that still haven't been fully excavated. Sites like Cahokia in Illinois show signs of an advanced pre-Columbian city, but barely get national attention. There's evidence of ancient copper mining in the Great Lakes region that predates known native cultures, but no one wants to talk about where the copper went. And when researchers ask questions about who was here before Columbus, well, they get the same answer. That's not how the story goes. And that's the common thread. It doesn't matter if it's in Bolivia, Japan, Turkey, Indonesia, or in the United States. If a site doesn't match the official timeline, if it threatens the idea that civilization is only 6,000 years old, if it suggests we were once smarter, more connected, or more advanced, they bury it. They shut it down. They call it natural. They call it symbolic. They call it anything but what it might actually be. Because archaeology isn't about discovery anymore. It's about protecting the brand. So how do you keep the biggest secrets on Earth buried in plain sight? Well, that's easy. You don't just hide the sites, you bury the people who ask questions. Let's talk about what really happens when an archaeologist or journalist or author or random guy with a ground-penetrating radar unit starts sniffling around places they're not supposed to. First, the warning shot. It usually starts quiet, a denied dig permit, a grant that suddenly dries up, a university that stops returning emails. Your colleagues start calling you controversial, which, let's be real, is academic code for he asked the wrong question. And if you don't shut up, here comes the canon. Your next book, labeled pseudoscience before it's even published. Your speaking gig, well, that's canceled. Your Wikipedia page, edited by someone who somehow always knows the exact narrative to push. You don't believe me? Ask Graham Hancock. He's been calmly, methodically, pointing out that maybe, just maybe, human civilization is older than 6,000 years. That maybe all these buried megaliths around the world aren't random. That maybe the people who built them were smarter than we give them credit for. And the academic world? Well, they lost their minds. Graham's been called everything from a crank to a racist because apparently, if you suggest an ancient global civilization might have once existed, you're now personally insulting every modern culture. Yeah, that makes total sense, doesn't it? Then there's Michael Cremo, who dared to write a book called Forbidden Archaeology. In it, he lays out a mountain of evidence that humans might have existed far earlier than the textbooks say. Tools in million-year-old strata, bones in the wrong layers. And what happened? Mainstream science blacklisted him so hard, you'd think he robbed a museum blind. Then there's Dr. Robert Scoach. You remember him from Egypt, we spoke about earlier? He said the Sphinx had weathering patterns that only come from rain, meaning it had to be way older than dynastic Egypt, before it was a desert. His reward? Academic exile. Gatekeepers lined up to call him a fraud, even though he literally showed them the erosion patterns, with science and logic and your eyeballs. And that's the game. If you find something that doesn't fit the model, they don't update the model, they don't debunk it. They update your reputation. If you don't play along, you're a conspiracy theorist. Even if you've got scans, footage, soil samples, peer-reviewed data, and the receipts printed in triplicates. Conspiracy has become a kill switch. It shuts down funding. It shuts down conversation. It shuts down curiosity. It used to mean a secret plot. Now it just means, shut up, you're making us uncomfortable. The system doesn't even have to prove you're wrong. It just has to make you look weird long enough for people to stop listening, which works until it doesn't. Let's just say the quiet part out loud. You don't spend decades burying ancient sites, blocking digs, and ruining reputations, unless you've got something to lose. So, what is it? What could be so dangerous about the past that they'd rather erase it than explain it? Okay, so let's start with the obvious one. Power. It's always power. If you're a government, an academic institution, or a billion-dollar museum complex, your entire world is built on one thing, the story, the official timeline, the neat little boxes, Mesopotamia, Egypt, Greece, Rome, then ta-da, us, civilization. So what happens if someone finds a megalithic site that predates all of it, or a buried structure that suggests humans were building complex temples before they were supposed to know how to plant wheat? You burn the story to the ground. And for some people, powerless without the story, that's unacceptable. Because if they admit they were wrong about that, you might start wondering what else they're wrong about. Like how society got here. Like who's actually in charge. Or why we're taught to trust the people keeping secrets. Next, we have the funding. You think research follows truth? No. It follows money. And the money follows the script. Universities don't fund mavericks with radical timelines. Textbook publishers don't want to rewrite 6 million copies. Tourism boards don't want tourists asking about things that aren't on the brochure. Try walking into a grant office and saying, "Hey, I think Atlantis might be real, and I want to scan some jungle ruins with LIDAR." You'll get laughed into the next fiscal year. Now, imagine you do find something big. You think the Smithsonian's going to put that in the front lobby? Do you think Cairo's going to issue a press release saying, "Oops, we were off by 10,000 years, our bad"? Not a chance. Because if the story collapses, so does the funding, so does the power, so does the control and the illusion. And illusions are very expensive. Now, what about the taboo, religious disruption? Well, let's get real uncomfortable for a second. What if these sites and the things they're hiding don't just mess with history books? What if they mess with origin stories? Who we are, where we came from? What if there really is something buried under the Sphinx, or encoded in Sumerian tablets, or carved into some jungle wall we're not allowed to see? What if it says something else, like, "We came from somewhere else"? Or worse, "We were made by something else"? Do you know how fast that would upend entire belief systems, institutions, political alignments? The people in power don't want to deal with that. They want things clean, predictable, controllable. And ancient truth? Well, that's messy. Next, technology. Yes, let's go there. What if it's not just about history? What if it's about technology, energy systems, resonance devices, stone cutting techniques we still can't replicate, chambers with electromagnetic anomalies, precision boxes that hum when struck, structures that align with stars better than your iPhone's GPS? What if the ancients weren't just spiritual, they were smart, And what if rediscovering their tech means we don't need theirs? We don't need oil or their power grid or their made-up scarcity economy. That's not a historical threat. That's a civilizational threat. And it's a motive worth burying entire timelines for. And here's the biggest red flag. They don't just ignore the past. They tell you not to look. They shame you if you do. They flood the space with garbage theories to make sure nobody finds the real ones. And they teach every kid the same bedtime story. Nothing important happened before 6000 BC. Don't worry about it. The smart people have it figured out. Go back to sleep. Because the moment we remember what we were, we might start questioning what we've become. And that's the thing they're most afraid of. So far, we've shown you seismic scans, buried chambers, censored digs, whistleblowers who vanished, and a global pattern of silence. But now it's time for the hard question. What's real? What's just a really compelling theory? Let's break this down like an excavation site, layer by layer, into several different tiers. Tier 1, the verified suppression. This is the concrete layer. This part isn't speculation. This is documented. Göbekli Tepe was intentionally buried. Not collapsed, not forgotten. It was buried by human hands. That's in the excavation reports, full stop. Gunung Padang scans showed multiple layers beneath the hill, some dated to over 20,000 years ago. That data is still public. So is the fact that the Indonesian government shut the project down after the announcement. The Sphinx Chamber? Dr. Thomas Göbekli and John Anthony West's seismic surveys are real. The void is real. Egyptian authorities confirmed it and then refused to open it. That's not theory. That's active suppression. Then how about UNESCO? They've literally threatened to pull World Heritage status from sites that dig too aggressively. It's not about protection. It's about control and power. These are receipts stamped, filed, and ignored. Then we have the second tier, peer-reviewed anomalies. These are the head-scratchers that make legit scientists whisper off the record. You have Robert Scotch's water erosion on the Sphinx. It's peer-reviewed, not debunked, just ignored. Because if he's right, the Sphinx is twice as old as Egyptologists claim, and that breaks the whole timeline. You also have precision-cut granite at Serapeum. Engineers have analyzed the tolerances. Modern machinery would struggle to replicate them. Yet we're told these were made with copper chisels. Sure, buddy. Then you have the Dendera light bulb carvings. You don't need to believe it's literal tech, but try explaining the cords, the filaments, and power sources as purely symbolic without your voice cracking. And then the underground shafts, the aquifers, and resonance chambers under Giza. They're all mapped. They're all sealed. Nobody's allowed in, and no one will say why. So these aren't fringe. They're peer-reviewed histories with no mainstream answers. They're receipts. Then we have the third tier, the fringe breadcrumbs. These are the weird layers we're still digging through. This is where it gets murky, not because it's fake, but because it hasn't been proven yet. There's the helicopter hieroglyphs in Abydos. They could be overlapping text. They could be something more. Either way, the dismissiveness is louder than the explanation itself. Then we have the ancient energy tech theory. These theories, like the Giza power plant or electromagnetic architecture, exist, and they're very compelling. They're well argued. But yes, they're still just theories. We're not claiming the pyramids had Wi-Fi. And then you have the Smithsonian bones and the cover-ups. Hundreds of old newspaper articles from the 1800s report 8 to 10 foot skeletons found in North America. But the bones? They're all lost. Every single one. Is that proof of a cover-up? Well, not by itself, but the pattern stinks. Then you have Mogenjo Daro's alleged nuclear-level radiation. Mainstream sources deny it, but the origin of that claim is murky, and the site's still weirdly radioactive. So look, we're not saying all these things are 100% true, by no means. We're saying they're worth investigating, because brushing them off, mocking them out of existence, that's not science. That's control and suppression. The bottom line? Not every claim is equal. Not every theory holds up. But the suppression? That's the red flag. Because when truth needs this much managing, when discovery gets punished, when history is locked behind gates and red tape, that's not archaeology. That's an agenda. They say history is written by the victors. But what if the victors weren't even from our time? What if the real story isn't just lost, it was buried on purpose? Not to preserve it, but to protect us, or to protect something else. Because for all our skyscrapers and satellites, we still don't know who built the first stone. We don't know why they buried temples, why they carved the warnings into walls, why they told stories of floods and fires and skies that fell. Maybe those weren't just myths. Maybe they were instructions left behind for us. And instead of decoding them, we paved over them. We fenced them off. We turned them into gift shops. We call ourselves advanced. But we're standing on a planet-sized hard drive of ancient memory and pretending it's just dirt. Civilization, for all its glory, might be one long case of amnesia. We forgot what we were. Then built museums to celebrate the forgetting. And now? Now we're censoring the people trying to remember it. But here's the thing about memory. You can try to bury it. You can ignore it. You can even pass laws to erase it. But sooner or later, it comes back. And when it doesn't knock politely. It cracks the ground open. So maybe those ruins weren't left for us to worship. Maybe they were left so we wouldn't forget. And maybe that's why they're burying it all over again. I know this was a beast of an episode. So if you made it this far, thank you. Seriously. Thank you for caring enough to sit with something this big, this uncomfortable, and this important. Because at the end of the day, this isn't just about lost cities or buried temples. It's about the truth, and whether or not we're willing to go looking for it, even when it's inconvenient, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's forbidden. So, if this episode hit you in the gut the way it hit me while making it, do me a favor. Please share it. Let's talk about it. Question the story we've been given, because the more of us who ask the hard questions, the harder it becomes for them to keep burying the answers. I'm Ralph, and this is Divergent Files. If you're still here, you're one of us now. I make these videos solo, with no crew, no staff. I make them at night, after the day job, and after my son goes to sleep. So when you like, comment, or subscribe, it really matters. Not just to the algorithm, but it matters to me personally. And if you believe in what we're building here, you can help keep this channel alive over at patreon.com/divergentfiles. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and remember, no matter what they tell you, the truth is still out there. These investigations are powered by those who believe truth still matters. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Join the mission at patreon.com/divergentfiles.